Okay, Cathers, I've got to show you this hilarious meme that went viral after the Golden Globes because Kylie Jenner was there with Timothée Chalamet.
PDA Central.
PDA Central.
Felt a little bit forced, didn't it?
Yes.
I still would love to, and we're going to have to get into this another time properly, deep dive into whether they are or are not a PR relationship.
We've got to talk about that.
Let me see this meme then. What is it?
So this meme is a picture of Kylie Jenner next to a picture of Cillian Murphy. And it says, imagine spending that much money on plastic surgery just to be told you look like a man in his late 40s.
Oh my God.
It's retweeting another meme.
Oh my God, they actually do look alike. That is scary.
Someone said Kylie looks like Cillian Murphy. No, I can't unsee it.
It's the smiling. It's something around like the cheeks. I don't know if it's to do with the work she's had done. As you say, because Cillian Murphy is obviously a very attractive man.
See, I've never fancied Cillian Murphy.
Have you not?
No.
Well, on the topic of unlikely leading men, I want to talk today about Barry Keoghan. And he's definitely giving a bit of Cillian, isn't he?
Well,
the piercing blue eyes.
I fancy Keoghan. Keoghan? Yes. Barry. Yeah. Barry, sorry, the journalist in me. Only refer to them by their last names.
Yes, he is strangely attractive. I say strangely. I think most other women do, in fact, agree with us, don't they?
There's just something very sexual about him.
It's those, like, piercing eyes.
Yes, and kind of, as he described, like a freakish energy.
Yes, which I'm going to get into because I want to talk to you all about the GQ profile that went live last week.
Yes, I read it.
But do you remember the TikTok I sent you a couple of weeks ago detailing all the work he's had done? Quite on theme, considering what we were just saying about Kylie.
Yes, I do.
Barry has, it must be said, had quite a few tweakments, I think.
Which is completely fine.
Fine, I'm here for it. Good for men to do it. His face has definitely transformed quite a bit. If you would like to go and Google a picture of him in 2007 versus now, I mean, obviously age comes into it. But that is a man who has had some work. And hell, it's bloody good work. He looks fabulous.
Do you think he got it to fit better with Hollywood's idea of a leading man?
I do.
Oh no, do you think he felt pressure?
Probably.
He should talk to Sarah Green.
He should. For context, guys, Sarah Green is the actor that Ellie mentioned last episode.
Sarah Green.
Yeah, poor Sarah Green. Leave the lady alone.
Not only did I write a whole profile about the work that she thinks she should have done, I've now mentioned it on the podcast. Like
three times.
Sorry, Sarah.
Okay, let's get on with today's episode.
So welcome back to Straight Up, the pop culture podcast hosted by Ellie and Kathleen.
You don't love to do the intro, but you just did that very well. Congratulations. Thank you.
I did it very fast.
We're back, guys. We've got another...
Don't say smorgasbord. No. Do not say. I saw it potentially creeping into your
life. I was literally like, what is another word? I'd literally say that every week, every time we don't have one topic. What am I going to say?
A miscellaneous
collection
of
little stories for you today.
Yeah.
It's not been the biggest week in terms of pop culture news, but there's some fabulous stuff on telly, I've got to say.
But there's so little going on that I went to do you know what I did on Friday night?
Go on.
I took myself to the National Gallery.
On your own?
On my own.
I mean,
to see that Franz
Hals. Could be tragic, or it could be a very cute little solo date.
To see the comic Dutch portraitist from the 17th century.
I mean, that is a niche Friday night activity, but
actually, it was really
good for you.
For anyone single, I will have to say that a Friday night turnout at the National Gallery is full of the kind of hot, arty young things of London.
Oh, so quite a good place to go pick someone up.
Yeah, and I was thinking if I was looking quite sexy, looking at a painting on my own, I could so imagine one of these men maybe coming up and being like,
but is that also not
his use
just
of light on his chin?
Is that not your
fantasy
kind of Hollywood
yes
conditioning, whereby you're convinced that you're going to be at the centre of some kind of meet cute?
Yes. Also, it's because I did look nice, and I was like, "Why is no one doing that?" Actually, I was wearing this dress. Actually, if you must know,
very nice. She's wearing a black knitted dress, by the way, guys.
Yeah. No, it was...
If you'd like to have a visual.
Yeah.
It's very... Ellie's giving serious...
Suburban mob wife, we said.
Yeah, Real Housewives of Salt Lake City.
In a dress I dyed myself in my washing machine.
It's black. It's got shoulder pads, knitted. You've got a kind of...
Chignon,
yeah. A bun going on.
And I've had my annual hair colour, so I finally don't look like the inside of an old boot.
Well, I'm wearing a tracksuit.
So. You always look very nice in your co-ordered tracksuits. I always think...
Kind. This one's from Life of Ease. Highly recommend, guys, if you're in the market for a little tracksuit. Okay, so let's talk about Barry Keoghan's insane rise to the top of the Hollywood crop. I've been in a bit of a Barry Keoghan wormhole since watching Saltburn, and I feel like most of the rest of the internet also has.
I couldn't remember which films
I'd seen him in prior to Saltburn. Obviously Dunkirk, but I haven't seen The Batman, the Robert Pattinson one, in which he plays the Joker. And he's meant to be excellent, isn't he? I also haven't seen Killing of a Sacred Deer, have you?
Very good.
I had no idea what a similar storyline Killing of a Sacred Deer has in terms of interloper into upper class family.
It is.
Yes.
And the...
Which now makes sense why Emerald Fennell was like, he's the guy.
Yeah. She saw him in that, exactly. Yeah, and it is a psychological portrait of a disturbed young man.
Yes.
Very true. Very good point.
One of the things Emerald Fennell says about him is just how special his eyes are, not just in terms of the piercing colour, but because they're like shark's eyes and he can like turn them on and off and do this really almost scary thing where they become completely emotionless and cold, like a shark.
Yes, that's which he can do.
I've got to say, so this GQ profile, British GQ cover interview, which has already been getting a bit of a kicking, I must say, in the Irish media in particular, because in The Stand first, they say he's one of our most exciting actors. The Irish, as you can well imagine, take a little bit of issue with the Brits co-opting him as our own.
Is the writer very American? Fairly.
Yes, the writer is American. So I wonder whether they were just misunderstood that when they say our actor, they just mean collectively,
just like
in terms
the
of Hollywood
actors.
But I know people are pissed off about it.
Well, yeah, I think there is such a conflation sometimes.
Of Great Britain and Ireland. Yeah, super annoying. They don't have their own like identity. And I'm saying that as someone who is part Irish. Very annoying.
Yes. Okay. That is strike one against the Duke. Carry on.
So it's by Alex Papademos. I can't remember if I said that. Sorry. But I found the piece fascinating mainly because I didn't know much about Barry's childhood.
Tell us.
So poor Barry, he grew up like mostly without his father, and his mother, Debbie, passed away when he was only 12 from a heroin overdose. She was in hospital, but by that point, he didn't see her a lot. He was bouncing around the foster care system with his brother for 7 years and then finally moved in with his grandmother. And that's where he first became fascinated with old kind of Hollywood stars. So he would watch these old films on TV and would just be completely enamored with the way that like Marlon Brando and James Dean and Paul Newman were speaking and moving and holding the screen. He then got very much into boxing. That's where he started, and eventually onto a film set because he saw an ad. It was a flyer in a shop window next door to the local boxing club where someone was looking to cast it, like a small film. So they were looking for like non-actors. This is what Keoghan says in the GQ piece. And they were looking to see if you had a dirt bike. And I had two of those. I was a non-actor and I had a dirt bike. He called the number from his granny's mobile phone, had an audition, and then got cast in his first film, which was 2011's Between the Canals. It's one of these mad, I'm saying this with air quotes, but like a rags to riches story. One of these ones, as we've touched upon in previous episodes, that Hollywood
from
and
Hackney
the media
to Hollywood
just can't get enough of. And it almost feels cheesy.
Yes, I know what you mean.
Do you know what I mean? But genuinely, that is how he built his career. He also, which I didn't know, had a very severe case of a flesh-eating disease a few years ago, right before the Banshees of Inisherin started shooting. One in five cases are fatal, and amputation of his arm. He's got a big snake tattoo on his arm by the scars. And he was worried that he might die, and the doctors were like, yeah, we don't know if you're going to die. Luckily, he was okay.
That would be unfortunate for Martin McDonagh.
Wouldn't it? Who went to see him in hospital and said he was a bit like, oh, shitty heck, is this going to happen? I mean, I am, of course, ad-libbing slightly there. I mean, I'm going to have to get into his personal life as well.
Well, yes, we must.
Because we can't not, can we? So his son is called Brando. He was born in August 2022 while he was filming Saltburn. He said it was the best year of his life, having a baby son and a leading man role at the same time. Unfortunately, they have split. Partner Alison Kearns, I think they split soon after the birth of the child.
Oh God, another reason.
Like literally, so I saw a TikTok the other day that was saying all these new leading men, from Barry to Jacob Elordi
to Jeremy Allen White.
Yes, they all dump their long-term girlfriends like instantly. As soon as they have a baby? No, as soon as they've like got a taste of fame.
Oh, I see. Oh yes. My God.
Allegedly, according to that highly trustworthy rag, the Daily Mail, was in a row about late nights. So I think he was perhaps enjoying the leading man life a little bit too much while she was home with the babe. He's now, however, linked to Sabrina Carpenter. Do you know who that is?
Yes, the musician.
Yes, 24-year-old American musician whose aunt, fun fact, is Nancy Cartwright, the voice of Bart Simpson.
How fascinating.
So random. She does look very much like Alison Kearns as well, I've got to say.
Also, are we in our Short King era?
Yes.
Because Jeremy Allen White is a nippy 5'5", I think.
Yes.
Because him and Rosalía are the same.
Oh my God, I'm obsessed with them, by the way, as a couple. How cool and gorgeous.
She is so hot.
Did you see that couple sort of dressing picture of them that was doing the rounds last week where they're wearing these kind of like monochromatic, all black outfits, but God, they're cool.
Also, they're
effortlessly so.
Yes, and they keep smoking together, and celebrities keep smoking in public and making it look cool, which is very bad.
Is that a new thing? I haven't really noticed
yes,
that.
Yes, smoking is back.
Okay. Did it ever go out of style? I'm not going to lie. I feel like celebrities have always smoked. Like Dua Lipa has proudly had the Marlboros on the go for the last like 5 years.
But there was a time where it wasn't cool to put it on Instagram. Now
I know what you mean. They had to hide their smoking. Like the Love Islanders when they had to start smoking upstairs.
Yes. Whereas now it's like, let me have an arty, blurry shot of me and my cigarette at a party. But carry on about Barry Keoghan.
Well, I just loved some of his quotes in this piece. You touched on one earlier. He was saying he used to be in his little freak child man era, as they called it, and now he's just man freak.
Freakish.
But basically, I'm sorry, I gave no context there. He's talking about being a leading man and also him flirting with Jacob Elordi. I'm sure you've seen some of the videos. I'm sure all the honeys have. Like the kind of moment where they pretended to go in for a kiss on the red carpet. What I do wonder, and I'm saying this as a straight woman, so please, any queer listeners that we have, do let us know your thoughts. Why is it fine for Barry Keoghan and Jacob Elordi to be like queer baiting like this? I don't know.
It's interesting, isn't it? Because I saw Barry kind of explain it, or was it Jacob? One of them said the reason why they're flirty with each other is just because they're so comfortable. And it's not flirting, it's just a sense of comfort they have.
See, he says, I think you're paraphrasing the GQ quote, but he did say it's flirting. He said, it's really flirting. We were constantly close. It ain't just for the cameras and the premieres. Me and Jacob, he's like a brother to me, honestly. I think when you're comfortable with someone, you can be as close as you want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's not like, oh, don't come near me. It's like, I'm comfortable. When I'm comfortable around people, I'm comfy. It's nice, man, he says. It's nice not just being looked at as the weird looking guy, the unique, fecking, freaky little freak man child, freak child man, whatever you want to call it. It's nice to see people kind of look at you in that way. I'll be honest, it is nice.
Yes, because there is a difference between being so comfortable that you're like hugging and touching your friends, which I'm really glad if men do more of.
Oh, I think it's so important for men to be like physically affectionate with one another and that not be shameful.
Yeah. But you're right, actually going in for the kiss on the lips, is that trying to suggest something more? But maybe
when they're both like ostensibly straight. I don't know.
But then like,
I'm just asking.
In lots of cultures, you kiss on the lips to say hello.
Yeah.
Between men. Or you hold hands.
He also says, my prettiness didn't get me this far, but he is conscious that being around someone audiences want to look at opens up other lanes for me. It's part of the leading man thing. So I think he's definitely trying to make a conscious move towards this more, again, air quotes, conventionally attractive leading man.
Yes.
Aesthetic.
Yes.
And perhaps that is why he got the work done, just to fit a little bit more into that specific Hollywood box. I don't know.
And also, are these two young people who surely are aware of like online culture, not just kind of savvy with stuff that's going to go viral, like them kind of playing up their flirty bromance is just going to
make the film even more popular, make everyone talk about it even more.
Like, did you see Anyone But You's promo, like Sydney Sweeney and Glenn Powell genuinely seeming like they're having an affair, but that has just essentially marketed the whole film.
No, I haven't even seen that.
Yeah, I mean, there is definitely something going on. When I was watching an interview with them, I was like, you seem completely in love with each other. He has dumped his girlfriend, I think, but she's still with her fiancé.
Interesting.
But there's so much chemistry, but they've played it up so much.
Purposefully for the film.
I reckon. I mean, it's literally single-handedly marketed the film.
I mean, the only reason I've even ever heard of the film is because of this, like, steamy potential romance between co-stars.
Exactly. So I wonder if celebrities are more savvy than we maybe think they are.
I think so. They know a bit of meta.
But a
pushing is only going to do the film favours.
I don't know. I'm sure there's something with Jacob Elordi and Barry Keoghan that's quite similar. I don't know. I just think, I wonder if they're like pushing it themselves.
I do love their chemistry. And it's so real, isn't it? When you see them together, like the little video, the Vogue interview that they do where they are kind of ribbing each other.
Yeah.
It's so sweet.
We're going to talk about it next week, guys, Priscilla. But my God, watch it. It was quite difficult watching Jacob Elordi, who I fancy so much, play Elvis, who is like a controlling abuser, and then like fancy him but hate him at the same time.
I have to say though, I didn't really, really fancy Jacob Elordi when he was in Euphoria. However, it's Saltburn that's done it for me. I now see the Jacob Elordi appeal.
He only wants to play fucked up men. He's now also got a serial killer film out.
He's really highbrow. He's been vocally dismissive of the Netflix kind of tween
has
film.
He?
broke him out. Yeah. What's broke the, him out. You know what I mean?
What's that? What's that one?
The Kissing Booth was his Netflix tweeny teeny trilogy. And he has been quite disparaging of it since. Like, he's definitely one of those actors that only wants to do highbrow stuff.
Interesting. Well, that hasn't worked out for him with his most recent film.
Has it not?
No. So he plays a serial killer who tries to murder a celebrity animal trainer, which is based on a true story. It's called He Went That Way. And all the reviews are like annihilating the fact that Jacob Elordi is like quite clearly like studying the greats. So he's like trying to be like Marlon Brando, trying to be like James Dean, and like
embarrassingly sincere.
Yeah, and just embarrassingly like copying their mannerisms and stuff. You know, it's just like your working out is showing.
Yes.
So, but I think that's normal for a young actor. I mean,
yeah. I have to say there was some quite funny discourse around a joke that Jacob made in that British Vogue interview, the video that we were just talking about, with lots of kind of jokes that feel quite sarcastic.
Yeah.
And he said, or he quipped around Saltburn and Emerald Fennell, that she wanted Timothy Chalamet for it. And he said, "Have you thought about Barry Keoghan?" It was obviously a joke. Emerald Fennell said that she wanted Barry for the film kind of from the start. But it triggered all this hilarious discourse about how not highbrow Timothy Chalamet actually is comparatively. And they're like, Saltburn is the film that Timothy Chalamet wishes he was in, but would never actually be in, because he is actually, like, Timothy Chalamet pretends. I saw a really funny article the other day. It was like, how French actually is Timothy Chalamet?
Oh, yes, that Vulture one.
Yeah, apparently his French is terrible. So when he's gone on French TV and stuff, everyone's like, you are not this cultured French.
As a French person, I can...
You can attest
to
that. I
can co-sign that. And, okay. Oh, yeah, and they interview French people and they're like, we don't own him.
Yeah, they're like, Timothy Chalamet is not French. He's American. Whereas he does have this kind of lofty persona, I think, that he wants to portray, which Kylie Jenner, I'm afraid, certainly dulls a bit, doesn't she?
I'm sorry, but like... So let's imagine if Timothée had been cast instead of Barry.
What a different film that would have been.
Yes. But also, he does have a freakish energy as well, Timothy.
He does. But could you see Timothée doing the grave scene, which, as a lovely listener pointed out to me a few weeks ago, was improvised?
Do you know what? Timothy, that would make me feel even more sick than I already felt watching Barry do it.
Could you imagine?
There's just something, he's just got such a ratty energy.
Who, Timothée?
Yeah.
But he is weirdly attractive at the same time. Another unlikely leading man. We are literally in the era of like the weird guy being the leading man.
It's so true. However, Jacob is
a massive...
He's an outlier.
Outlier to that.
Because we're going to get all into that.
We'll get all into Jacob next week, guys.
But I was reading an article the other week about how celebrity PDA is back.
Yes, which is very true. I read the article in British Vogue by Rebecca Cope.
Yes.
I saw that.
And it reminded me, it mentioned Timothée Chalamet snogging...
Lily Rose Depp,
and I went up to look at the pictures, and
they are actually hilarious, aren't they? They were eating each other's face on that boat.
But they both look
vile.
It's just so unattractive.
It looked like two horny little teenagers, didn't it?
Yes, it did. Like, it really did look like
that. What world were they?
It was like watching two little. It was like watching baby birds being fed.
It was. It was very that. God, yeah, I could not imagine Timothée doing the grave scene, but hats off to Barry, because clearly he really is an actor who kind of embraces...
freakishness.
Yeah. Apparently the script itself just read...
Fuck the grave.
No. The last stage direction for the scene was, then, slowly weeping, he undresses, ... And that was it. So apparently Emerald said to Barry, I just have the feeling that Oliver would unzip. And Barry said, yep. Emerald then cleared the set, not quite knowing where Barry would take it. Unzipping is one thing, but then the ... that he decided to embrace was clearly quite another that people weren't expecting, but does add to the grotesque brilliance of the film, I think, because it's just so hard to watch. Like you said, that you are aware that it's a very transgressive creative decision.
Yes, it also goes on for quite a long time, that scene.
Oh, it's awful. I literally couldn't watch. Like, I had to keep looking away. Els, I am so excited. I have some fabulous news to share with you that's definitely going to make our January feel a bit brighter.
Oh, thank God, babe. Tell me right this instant.
So Yonder have added the most delicious drinking and dining partners to its January experiences. I can't quite cope. I'm dying to tell you about them so we can pick one and go together for a much-deserved New Year's treat.
Stunning. Go on, Cappers.
Okay, so we can choose between Hopton, King's Cross, one of my faves, Frenchie in Covent Garden, Italian Spot Artusi in Peckham, Gastropub The Bull and Last in Highgate, Seafood Restaurant Orisay in Notting Hill, Correggios for Mexican in Stoke Newington, Thai Place Plaza in Tottenham Court Road, Arcade Food Hall, also on the Tottenham Court Road, and Deep Breath, Kalai, a Thai restaurant in London Bridge from the founders of Somsa, lovely, and our fave cocktail bar, Swift, in Soho.
I am salivating. We've got to go to them. Plaza I've actually been to, proper, authentic, no-frills Thai food, obsessed. And Swift is one of my favourite cocktail bars. They do the best Irish coffees in London. And Frenchie looks so bougie. It's been on my special occasion list for years.
Well, babe, you can actually get a lot of the build paid for with your points. How great is that? So guys, if you don't already know, Yonder is a lifestyle credit card that allows you to collect points for every pound you spend. And these points are then redeemable at Yonder's monthly changing selection of partners across food, fitness, drink, wellness. It's all in London and there's travel across the UK and even online shopping.
I have about 100 quid's worth of points right now, which means I can probably get an entire meal for two completely free with Yonder.
Lucky. Thank you so much to our amazing partner, Yonder. Get your first month free and 10,000 points when you join, then £15 a month thereafter. Please make sure you borrow responsibly. T's and C's apply. Rep 66.7% APR variable. And the final thing I will say on the GQ profile, and this isn't to be a hater. Obviously, we are both former employees of the magazine.
A prestigious brand.
What were they thinking with this cover shoot? Have you looked at the photographs?
I have. I think a lot of their shoots are unhinged.
So guys, go away and look at the pictures, please. They're by Jason Nocito. The lead image is Barry in a string vest with a pigeon on his shoulder.
Why a pigeon?
Why a pigeon? And is that a real pigeon or a prop pigeon? I don't know why, but I want to know. That's the biggest question I have looking at these photographs.
It looks shit.
Is that a real pigeon?
Pigeons look terrible.
It's a very strangely styled shoot. Like, he's wearing all these weird cropped hoodies. The looks are very retro. I mean, I think they were trying to go retro, but they look absurdly 80s. The sports look he wears in one with leg warmers. I know leg warmers are in for Gen Zs, not for our age.
Not
don't
for
you
us.
Dare get a pair of leg warmers.
No, ballet core, very much not
we're
for
a little
me.
Bit old for that.
We've done actual ballet, thank you.
Oh, we already wore leg warmers the first time around with the Pineapple Dance Studio trends. I think
sake.
We literally talked about
did,
this
yeah,
on air
yeah.
recently. But yeah, the pictures are bloody odd. They really are. Oh, in fact, though, I think it is a real pigeon because there's one with its wings span out. He just doesn't look very good. As in, it looks like a comical spoof.
It looks like some of the pictures look so uninteresting and kind of grimy that it's like a teenage boy uploading his
yes,
like, Bebo
exactly
profile picture.
That. One of them where he sat on this chair and it's kind of out of focus as well. He's wearing these hideous sort of tie-dye jeans. Literally looks like the Hinge profile picture of like a Bay Essex lad.
From like a 14-year-old.
Yes, who's like just turned 18 and wants to look like a cool, trendy man. And then the bizarre one of him jumping up in the air. I mean, I could have taken a better photo than that.
What is this blurry aesthetic that is plaguing all of celebrity
styling?
Oh,
it's so tragic because it's like all of the traditional media brands are trying to take on the kind of young Gen Z social media aesthetic. But no, when you're a glossy publication, I just don't think that works. I don't want to look. When you can only include eight pictures of Barry, I don't want one of them to be a blurry shot of the back of his head.
It's actually a massive issue that I have as an editor because often at The Telegraph, we can't shoot every celebrity because they're like all over
the world.
And we don't always have the budget for it. So sometimes we'll have to buy in shoots that they've like images they haven't used for their mag shoots or whatever. And the blurry thing is a huge issue. The number of times I've had to reply to celebrity PR and be like, do you have one where like Caroline Polachek isn't almost completely opaque?
Literally.
Because she's been blurred like out of focus to such an extreme. That's like,
long been my issue with press shots, like for musicians in particular. I know you're trying to go for something arty and edgy and cool here, but that is blurry and you can't even see the person's eyes. Like that's not an acceptable press shot. You can't tell who it's of.
No, exactly. Or like all these multicolored swirling colors that like
you know, I just want a flipping headshot of the person looking at the camera. Is that too hard
that's
to
the
ask
other thing. It's like when we were at GQ it was always like eye contact is a key. And
fun
now,
fact guys, magazine covers that have people with sunglasses on literally sell worse than when you can see the person's eyes.
So, but now no one wants to look at the camera because it's like, oh, what? The camera was there. I didn't know.
Oh, me being snapped for an international fashion magazine? What's that about? I mean, I've got to say, Barry's best shot in the whole interview, and guys, go away and look at it. You can see it on the GQ website, is the final image. That, to me, which is the most obvious, I know.
Yes. Just
but it's where you can see him most clearly.
A bog standard shot
of his
face. A bog
standard headshot. And I could have taken that on my iPhone, quite frankly.
You genuinely could have.
Sorry to be such a hater, but I just don't like this. Maybe it's just...
Our Gen Z listeners, could you tell us, one, why does he have a pigeon on his shoulder? Two...
Are we just chuggy?
Is blurry good? I mean, I've said this on the podcast before, but when my sister's Gen Z, and whenever I want her to do a mini photo shoot of me, she will literally wait until I'm moving out of the frame and then take like the wispy back of my hair with me, like,
and she's like, this one's perfect.
Yes. And I'm like, Annabelle, I'm not in it. I'm not there.
Oh, that's too funny.
Talking of GQ's really terrible photo shoots. Sorry, we do love GQ, but... Have you seen the one of Ashley Wilde?
No.
Okay, so this is the GQ hype cover.
Is that... Is he leaning on a tree? Or is that... What is that? A golden...
Kappa, tell us what you see.
I see Ashley Walters lying loosely, as Ellie would say, against what at first looks to be a tree, but is in fact some kind of gold lame
skeleton
statue slash tree slash, like, this bit of it looks like some kind of athletic leg.
I mean, the top bit looks like it could be an old buffalo carcass.
It does. He's wearing some Gucci trousers.
And the headline is Ashley Walters's growing pains.
What, so, a 38-year-old man?
So is the weird thing that he's lying on meant to symbolise a walking stick?
Oh, I was going to be like a skeleton.
I just don't get it.
I'm not sure about that, I've got to say.
We have lost the art of looking just nice. Just a nice, yeah. Just look nice.
Nice doesn't cut it anymore, honey.
Talking of unusual leading men, Jeremy Allen White being one of them, and how much we're thirsting over him and his Calvin Klein ad.
Yes.
I read a New Yorker piece where they analyse why it is we find him so hot.
And
I
want to know
your thoughts, because I feel a bit like, is this like a journalist reaching and trying to overanalyse everything?
For me, it's the same as with Barry. It's those eyes, the piercing eyes.
Yes. So for this,
suck you in.
For this reviewer, she says the reason, Jennifer Wilson says the reason there's been such a hormonal response to the ad is that because he plays Carmi the chef in The Bear,
yeah,
our lust for him is completely wrapped up in the kind of forbidden desire we had to go to restaurants during the pandemic.
No, I'm sorry, that's ridiculous.
So
reach.
She says,
no, fuck
she says,
off.
Carmi, because no. the chef is Carmi, she goes, Carmi, interpreted by White with the precision of a knife, channeled the repressed urges and thwarted carnality of the pandemic years.
Stop.
With his tattooed grungy intensity, he was the snack the people were craving after 2 years of slathering on hand sanitizer and stockpiling
Shut up. No. I mean, yeah, everyone loves a hot chef, but I don't think that's anything to do with restaurants being closed in the pandemic. Also, controversial opinion here, I didn't like The Bear. I know everyone else does, but I just thought it was very not good. Sorry, that was a really not eloquent
way of putting it. Not good. It was
I was all right. I didn't particularly enjoy it, and I haven't bothered to watch the second season.
Oh, Cathars.
Yeah. So I like his Calvin Klein ad, not being a fan of The Bear, so that's why I would have to disregard what this journalist is saying, because to me, the two are not necessarily intertwined.
So talking of Calvin Klein, Cathars, what are your thoughts on the fact that FK Twigs' Calvin Klein advert was banned by the Advertising Standards Authority?
I find that so bizarre because the ad came out last year. It's not a new advert. So why the ASA have chosen, at the same time that Jeremy Allen White's ad has gone viral, to ban FK Twigs' similarly nude ad for presenting her as a stereotypical sex object, I just don't understand.
It's not
why is she a sex object, but he isn't?
It's misogynoir.
It really is, because also Kendall Jenner, other women have been photographed near nude for Calvin Klein, and there was no problem with it then.
Kendall Jenner, she's literally topless, like, and it's so sexually suggestive. I think there is, a massive thing around, for some reason, black female bodies being seen as more overtly sexual. And so FKA Twigs has said in her statement, I do not see the stereotypical sexual object that they have labelled me. I see a beautiful, strong woman of colour whose incredible body has overcome more pain than you can imagine.
Yeah, because she's had real health issues. I think she had a really, really harrowing experience a few years ago battling fibroid tumours. And she's been quite open about the laparoscopic surgery that she had to have to get the 6 large fibroid tumours removed. And she likened them to 2 apples, 3 kiwis, a few strawberries and a fruit bowl of pain every day removed from her uterus.
And obviously she's had the very difficult lawsuit with Shia LaBeouf.
Yeah.
Over his alleged physical harassment.
Abuse.
Physical abuse, yeah. So
it's a very weird move from the regulator, because I think while they're clearly trying to look woke and that they're trying to de-objectify women, actually all they've done is something that feels incredibly sexist.
I don't look at that ad and think that's super sexual. I think what a strong, beautiful woman.
Yeah, me too. Who's been through so much. Who's persevered. And yes. She literally does look strong.
Strong, so strong.
The opposite of an object, yes. I think. You feel her power.
It's a powerful, it's a powerful photo. Agreed. What I will say, just in terms of like the ad in general, I don't understand the whole, like, here's a Calvin Klein underwear ad, but let me not show any of the underwear. It's like, the strap band is like Calvin's or nothing. So but then you're not wearing nothing, you're wearing a shirt.
Although the denim pieces are always Calvin's.
That's true.
As well.
But isn't it meant to be more about the underwear?
Kind of, but weirdly in their underwear ads, as you just said, people are often just wearing, mostly nude and wearing a bit of denim.
I'd rather just see her in the underwear personally, maybe, if I was thinking about buying a Calvin Klein piece.
Yeah, it's weird. I feel like the Calvin Klein ads are known for their nudity as well.
Yes, and if you, as the New Yorker piece actually looks at, if you look at the history of the Calvin Klein ads, Marky Mark with his like bulging crotch and like biting his lower lip and like so much more sexual than FK Twigs.
Mark Wahlberg, yeah.
Yes. Like, I mean, it's actually really, if you go and look back at those Calvin Klein ads, it's like such a weird, like different era. Like he literally looks like he's trying to do like a parody of a Blue Steel face. Like he's just like thrusting out his bottom lip. I mean, also, like, it's an underwear ad. Of course, you're, like, selling selling desire, right?
Yeah, that's the point.
That is literally the point. Katha, speaking of sex and desire.
Yes.
I have been to see the film of the moment, Poor Things, at the cinema on Friday night.
I can't wait to hear. Oh, my God. So you went to the cinema and you went to the National Gallery?
Yes, I went to see Franz Hals and then I went to see Poor Things.
By yourself? On both?
No, Poor Things, it's joined me at.
Okay, nice.
He did, yeah. Because actually one of my New Year's resolutions, which I've made in the last few days, is to do more things on my own.
That's nice.
This year.
Well, as I said to Emma Gannon, I really want to go on a solo holiday. I do not have the budget for it at the moment, but it is a plan for the near future.
Yeah, it's a very good idea. So the film is starring Emma Stone in one of her best roles yet. She won the Golden Globe.
I loved how surprised she looked.
Yes. And I think she's definitely going to get an Oscar nomination, if not the Best Actress Oscar. So it's adapted from Alistair Gray's 1992 comic novel of the same name. And it's directed by Yorgos Lanthimos, who I absolutely love. He directed Killing of a Sacred Deer.
Yes.
He did The Favourite. Did you ever see that?
With Olivia Colman?
Yes.
Yeah, I didn't love that film.
Oh, but it's... And The Lobster. So it's
the dark. I liked The Lobster with Rachel Weisz and Colin Farrell. Yeah.
It's a kind of maverick, dark, perverted energy. Freakish, as Barry would say. Very of the moment. So basically, it's set in a fictional steampunk 1800s Europe. And it follows a mad scientist called Godwin, played by Willem Dafoe, who essentially creates a kind of Frankenstein creation. Bella Baxter, played by Emma Stone, who has the body of an adult woman, but the brain of an infant. I'm not going to say too much more about how this creation comes about, but the film follows Bella Baxter's experience of the world as if it were brand new. So even though she looks about 30, she is learning how to speak, learning how to walk.
And the film follows her progression.
But what's really interesting is seeing how you experience things like sex or like conversation with people with absolutely no preconceived notions, no judgment, no shame, no sense of like decorum.
What an unusual narrative.
Yeah, so it's actually a very feminist film, I would say, because very early on in her, I guess, mental growth, we see her discover masturbation at the breakfast table, and she just starts going at it at the breakfast table, having a great time. And she then like starts to tell everyone that's around her, like Godwin, her, I guess, dad, her creator, the maid. And she's like, look, Bella has found the way to fast instant happiness, and tries to show them how to masturbate and how she masturbates. And everyone's like, no, put it away. You can't do that in public. And she's like, but why? If it's such a great way to like feel love and it makes me so happy, why would I hide it? So it's kind of all about why we see sex in such like shameful private terms. And the whole film is actually kind of, I would say, a journey of sexual enlightenment. She's constantly wanting to have sex with everyone, constantly trying to get people to go down on her, constantly masturbating, because she's like, this is fucking
wild.
And at one point she gets hired by a brothel because she's like, I love having sex and I need money. Why would this transaction is just great for everyone involved. What is shameful about it? And she's like telling people about how she just got bonked for some cash, and the guy she's with is like, whoring is the worst thing a woman could do. And Bella's face is just like, but why? It was so fun. And now we have money. And it's just really nice to see sex be treated in almost like with this kind of like childlike wonder of like, it's just a wonderful feeling.
Is the film like explicit?
It's
what's the rating?
Yeah, it's rated 18. Okay. And a lot of people have said that the sex scenes are wild. I actually, considering I'd seen so much talk about how sexual it is, I didn't think it was more sexual than Saltburn. It's definitely less freaky in terms of the sex. Like, you're just watching her getting it on a lot, but like, not, you know, it's not as full frontal actually as Saltburn. I loved how it covered sex and also just general female liberation, because all these men around her are trying to contain her and trying to tell her what not to do and trying to lock her up. And
is it from a female director?
No, it's from Yorgos Lanthimos.
Yes.
And it's what's interesting is even the kindest men with the best intentions are still trying to clip her wings, and like, actually even nice guys are still trying to control women, which I think is quite accurate to how a lot of nice men see themselves.
So 5 stars from Eleanor Halls?
5 stars from me, 5 stars from literally everyone. It's had 5 stars across the board. Really funny as well. The physical comedy is so good. There's a dance. You know, when you just know when you watch a film, a bit like Saltburn, that everything is going to come a meme and go viral on TikTok. I felt there were so many moments in Poor Things that I was like, that's going to be a whole thing on TikTok. There's a scene where she dances for the first time and it's just so funny and insane and absurd. So much of it is absurd. I was just laughing out loud. Like, the way that Emma Stone is able to walk as if she was walking for the first time in an adult body and talk, like, everything is like back to front with the way she's talking, because she's learning how to speak like an adult really like fast, but still doesn't know how the words go together.
So the film opens with her sort of being born.
We
so you watch the entire trajectory. So it's a weird coming of age story.
No, so she was already a lot. So I don't want to spoil it, but basically there's a reason for why she has an infant's brain, but it's the scientists doing.
Right.
So she was always an adult woman, if you see what I mean. What I really liked though is just all the funny ways with which she describes everything she sees for the first time without knowing the word for it. So she'll describe sex as furious jumping and like things like that, and that's just really fun. And also it's quite refreshing because there are just things that were like, oh yeah, well, this is, we've just taken this as the way we act because it's what we do in polite society. But actually the way Bella confronts it, you're like, actually maybe you have a point. Like, she's in a restaurant and she spits a bit of food out of her mouth and everyone's looking at her like, oh, that's so impolite. Why would you spit out a piece of food that you've been served in a restaurant? And she just looks around and goes, but why would I keep it in my mouth if it is revolting? And you're like, well, actually, that's kind of fair.
Yeah.
There are so many like rules around how we have to act in society. But it's really fun. Very funny.
Okay. So it's a comedy.
It's a comedy. It's a black comedy.
We like a bit of a dark comedy here at Straight Up.
It's very bizarre. It's very odd.
Well, I will watch it when I can do so from the comfort of my own home. You know me and my aversion to the cinema.
Yes.
I won't be making a trip to watch it, but I will be trying to stream it the moment I can.
It's
Thank
very
you,
long, though. 2 hours 20. My God. Oh. Every film needs to cut off at 2 hours.
Why is every film so long?
I don't know. They shouldn't. Cathers, we have many pet peeves that unite us, but I must say one of the most notable has got to be our misophonia, which, as we've recently discovered, is the term used to describe a negative emotional reaction to common sounds.
Oh my God, babe, nothing enrages us quite like the sound of someone frothing at their desk or tapping away violently on their keyboard. For me, as someone that struggles with ADHD, distracting sounds are honestly such an issue when I'm trying to work. I actually can't cope.
Of course, which is why we're such big fans of the tiny, comfy and super unobtrusive Karma earbuds from our brilliant podcast sponsor, Flare Audio. Cathers, how do they work? Take it away.
Well, huns, our ears are shaped like shells, so the sound we receive is always distorted at about 20%. Most people's brains filter that out, but if, like me and Elle's, yours needs a little bit of a helping hand, then the Karma earbuds are just perfect.
Such a an upgrade, I have to say, from my noise cancelling headphones, which are very antisocial when you're in the office and a colleague's trying to talk to you and block you off from sounds you actually really need to hear. Don't just take our word for it either, guys. They've sold 2 million pairs since the launch of lockdown, and they even do mini versions for kids and a new version called Karma Soft, which is an extra soft option for those with more sensitive ears.
Okay, go to flareaudio.com to snap up your Karma earbuds.
Thank you so much to Flare. And the second film that I want to talk to you about, also on the subject of sex, is called How to Have Sex, which came out a couple months ago. And
I've heard of this.
Yes. So it follows these three girls who are 16, 17, and their first like girls party holiday away to Malia in Crete. And okay, it follows, it. Yes, and it follows Tara in particular, who's played by amazing rising star Mia McKenna-Bruce. And she is a virgin whilst her other friends have had sex before. And so losing her virginity for her is a massive kind of burden.
Is it the aim of the holiday?
It's the aim of the holiday for her. But there is so much pressure, and I won't spoil it, but essentially she does have sex, but it doesn't go to plan, because I think for so many women, when does losing your virginity ever really go to plan? And we follow the kind of emotional fallout from that experience and like the grey area of consent.
Did it feel very true of the teen girl experience?
It literally felt like I was watching a documentary. It's by first-time director, 30-year-old Molly Manning-Walker.
She's gone so buzzy now. Everyone's talking about her since the film came out.
She was directing music videos until now. This is her first feature film. It's so good. A big ick for me when I'm watching films and TV is party scenes, which Ashley Walters actually once said, like, clubbing scenes and riot scenes are like a no-no for him, because they just always look cheesy and shit and fake on screen. But the party scenes in this film of like being in the strip in Malia and the clubs are so accurate. Like the fact that there's like never any silence apart from like the morning after at like 10 a.m. in the hotels, when like there's like a deathly silence where everyone's like dying from a hangover. But then like from like midday, it's like party, party, party all the time. And I don't know, it was like intoxicating, but also like harrowing, because you were just remembering all your
reminded
own experiences.
Of those kinds of holidays.
Did you go to one of them?
I went to so many of those kinds of holidays. Yeah. So my very first girls' holiday, which we've touched on before, which was the big trend for our age group, was going to Newquay.
Yes.
So I did that after GCSEs. And then in between my two A-level years, we did a girls' holiday to Zante.
Yeah.
And it was exactly what you just described, a typical strip holiday. We didn't really fit in. I mean, I guess we did and we didn't. Once we were there, we were like, whoa, because this sounds absolutely ridiculous and makes me sound very London-centric, which I'm not meaning to be. But growing up in London, you obviously are mostly surrounded by people from London.
Yeah.
And it's only going on these holidays that you realise how many other areas of Britain actually have their own teenagers and young people as well.
Yeah.
Sounds ridiculous.
No, that is actually something that, the whole Southern girls and the Northern boys is a thing in this
yeah.
film as well.
And we ended up always having like water fights with water balloons with Liverpudlian guys over the balconies. So we did Zante, and then the year after we did Magaluf, which I would say was my most obvious 18 to 30 style holiday. Which was hilarious and so fun and just mental. It was foam parties. We did, though, go with some of our boy mates. We went for 2 weeks, which is crazy. When I look back, I'm like, how the hell?
Oh, my God.
Did we drink alcohol like that every single day for 2 weeks? But we crossed over by a week with our boy mates from our school. And so actually that was quite nice, because having them there meant that we had a very different experience of it. Instead of being like the single four gals, we were almost protected by this like,
oh, that's nice.
Presence of other men, which I'm not saying is a good thing, but things have changed a lot in the last kind of 10 years, right? And there is a very misogynistic overtone to those kind of holidays. And being with other boys meant that lots of the like gross men just completely left us alone, which we really enjoyed it because we got to like enjoy things like foam parties in the safety of knowing that no creeps were going to come up behind us and try and flipping molest us or anything.
Right.
We could get our male friends to essentially create
a ring,
a circle around us.
Oh, cute. I mean, I found it like horribly accurate in the way it portrayed female jealousy around boys.
Ooh.
So, as I say, Tara is a virgin. The other two have had their virginities taken already. I mean, even that phrase is so
taken.
Weird.
That feels
Have had sex already. Oh my God, am I a 90-year-old man? And one of Tara's friends is interested in the guy who's interested in Tara. And she basically puts Tara off him by being like, no, he's like not hot enough for you. You can do better, while secretly trying to get in there herself.
Oh, that's so teenage girl.
Such a teenage girl thing, yes, that people used to do. I've definitely had that someone do that to me before. Being like, you can do better. Pardon me, whilst I actually just
slide in there.
Yeah. And then also that girl is also the one that tries to slack her off as like a massive virgin to the guys to try and shame her. And that again, all that shaming, that the
classic
shaming the girls
girl
would do
stuff.
To try and make themselves seem really cool around boys, but their friends to be less cool. I hated that shaming around people's virginity, which was such a thing for my year group once we hit 14, 15.
God.
Those who hadn't had sex were seen as like other.
What I thought was quite funny about those kind of holidays, though, is prior to actually going on an 18 to 30 trip, we would have liked to think of ourselves, our little girl group, I think, as like kind of worldly, kind of cool. We hung out with some older guys, like we were clubbing in London. On those holidays, we felt so sort of naive and small, and like there's all these women walking around the pool with obvious boob jobs, and we're like, oh my God, we are tiny little pathetic girls. It definitely gave us perspective.
Yes.
Where we were in the social pecking order.
Yeah, I mean, this poor girl is only 16, and there's a bit where she finally does have sex on the beach, and just it was heartbreaking seeing her disappointment and also actual distress, because it's that grey area between she doesn't say no, but she didn't
want
it.
It's definitely not an ideal scenario.
No, and so many of my friends had sex on the beach, or like, I mean, genuinely some of them wouldn't even be able to know what happened, you know, particularly in Yuki. Like, there were so many girls that just got blackout and then kind of had a sexual experience but were so embarrassed to even talk about. There was so much shame because your friends don't have the language or the emotional maturity with which to discuss it with you. And that's one of the things that's picked up in the film, is like they don't have
there were no conversations about consent then, though. Like you say, there was also, I feel like we have hopefully moved on in the last 10 years in that there was definitely more of a sense when we were younger and we were these teen girls that you were lucky for a boy to pay attention to you, whether or not you were interested in them.
Yes, and I think there was a massive thing, feeling of transactionality, of like, if this guy is going to spend time with me, I've got to give him something. I've got to give him something that he wants.
I think as well, looking back on those times, so when we were both at GQ and GQ did like a Me Too special, I wrote a piece about the 18 to 30 holiday post Me Too.
Oh yes, I remember.
And looking back at the gender dynamics on those kind of holidays, I remember male colleagues of ours being really shocked at things that I hadn't even considered to be inappropriate that I put in the piece. So mentioning how much you don't have agency over your own body, in the sense that in somewhere like Magaluf, if a guy feels like picking you up, they'll just do it. Could be a complete stranger walking past you and they might just pick you up, and then suddenly you're like in the air and you're like, can you put me down? But there was a real sense of women not having ownership over their own bodies that just was normal.
Yes, and I remember, well, not just abroad, but just clubbing in general at that age, men would just come up behind you.
Yeah, that's what I mean, like get into your personal space. I don't think you can do that anymore, would teenagers do that now?
You would end up dancing with someone from behind.
Just a weird man whose face you haven't even seen. I say man, it would be like a sweaty teenage boy.
You would rely, well, often it was grown men if I was going out to clubs. And I remember so often that what you'd have to do is get one of your mates in front of you, they'd give you a thumbs up or down. And so like, I'm the only one that can see whether he's hot or not. You can't even see him.
You'd get a friend, I remember, to always try and like get in between you, like they'd have to sort of push the boy out of the way to dance with you, to try and just subtly be like, I'm dancing with her now.
Yeah,
it's mad. Whereas in this day and age, I would hope that young people are like, can you not, you just say something. I didn't feel empowered enough to literally just turn around to a complete stranger who was all over me without them asking, get off.
Yeah,
I didn't feel I could say that then.
Yeah, it's so true.
I really hope young women can now.
Well what was disturbing us is this film is not stated, it's meant to be now.
Is it meant to be now? Yeah, yeah. I wondered whether it was a noughties.
So I was
throwback.
No, it's meant to be now. So I was kind of shocked that therefore these girls still don't seem to have the emotional maturity or language with which to discuss what is clearly a kind of rape with each other. Because I think also, let's not romanticize having sex the first time. I think it's for a lot of people, you just want to get out of the way. You just want to get out of the way so it stops feeling like such a big thing.
The albatross around your neck.
Exactly. So I don't think it needs to be this gorgeous, like, lovey-dovey moment. But also, it does need to be consensual and at least fun. for both parties. I think that's the issue, is that men at boys at that age don't care if the girl is having fun.
So does the film raise interesting questions about consent, or is it just sort of reflecting back what we already know to be true as women around the same age as Molly Manning Walker?
Well, Molly Manning Walker has actually said she made it very clear not to demonize men in it. So she says that because she is a lesbian and she is a mask presenting female, that's her words. So she says, I sympathize with men and how they date women. She says, not taking away all blame or guilt, but I know that it's not all their fault. It's the way that society has brought them up. Be a strong man. You've got to take the lead and you've got to know what you're doing. I feel it so much trying to go on dates, even as a woman dating a woman.
Oh, fascinating.
Yeah, so she says, as a mass-presenting female, I know that I'm affected culturally by the world. I'm told how to hit on women by films.
So it's all about the tropes of masculinity.
Yeah, so she was also sexually assaulted at a party when she was younger. So I think she draws on that as well.
Right.
So yeah, it's not a sense of men are awful and women are victims. It's very much a very nuanced look at the grey area of consent.
Okay, I'm definitely going to watch it. Where can I do so?
You can do it on Amazon Prime. I think I rented it for like £3.49. And I know these are like very triggering and dark themes, but all in all, the film is not dark.
That's kind of what I was trying to get at. Yeah. Is it a sort of nostalgic fun it's film nostalgic. Or is it quite a depressing film?
It genuinely does feel like you're watching a documentary of three girls having the time of their lives in some ways, but also, as with all everything that's built up like this of first experiences, huge disappointment, you know, like they have a first, this actually I found so accurate, their first night is their worst night. Like they get so drunk, one of them's sick, they don't really meet anyone, they don't really know where to go, the strip isn't that fun.
That does feel quite accurate.
It's so, you know, that horrible, like, we're meant to be having the time of our lives, but you're so focused on having the time of your lives that actually everything feels disappointing.
It was a bit like that for us in our first holiday at Zante, actually. We so much preferred Magaluf the year after.
Well, that's the thing, I think, when you go away as girls, or even when you go on a night's out, if you're like, this is a night we're going to meet boys, or even me, I'm 30 now, but I still go out with single friends, or we used to, and be like, this is a night we're going to find you a man. And
it's never that night.
You never find anyone. I had a horrible night with one of my friends 2 years ago where we went out purposely to find her someone to, you know, have a fun time with. And it was possibly the worst night I've ever had. Everything was closed. We couldn't find anyone. No one was dancing. Like, we ended up in some casino in Soho, but like no one came up to us. No one tried it on with us. No one bought us a drink. You know those nights where you're looking so good, and for some reason that's the night no one wants to even buy you a drink.
That's so funny.
But then the nights where you're looking, where you don't feel yourself and you don't even want a drink, that's the night someone wants to send you a bottle of champagne or whatever. You can't predict these things.
It does depend on the location, though, because we did go back to Zante about 10 years later. We had another girls' holiday there, a similar group, but we just happened to go to Zante. We just wanted to get like a cheap villa with a pool where we could hang out. And it happened to be in Zante. And we went to the strip one night just to go and have a look. Yeah. Oh, my God. Just those places are literally like the back ass end of the world, aren't they? Just where culture goes to die.
Yes.
And it makes Brits look awful because they're legless, falling over everywhere. Funny little bars as well. There was this one place called Cocktails and Dreams, but the tails had died on the light sign, so it just says Cock and Dreams. You're just like, oh god.
Yes, it's like, oh god, we've just brought the worst of British seedy club culture to
these other Greek islands.
And there's scenes of them doing karaoke, and it's like, oh my good god.
Okay, I'm definitely going to watch that. I love the sound of it. And yeah, that I guess it's the naivety of youth that you can never get back to. Recently, I was even looking through old Facebook pictures.
Oh,
and when you see your little faces in photos from old girls' holidays, you know, pre-proper work, people pre-life grinding you down.
Yeah.
Lots of family tragedy. I mean, friends of mine had gone through family tragedy at that point, but I don't know, there's a youthfulness and an innocence when I look at those pictures. I'm like, they really were the days of our lives.
I know,
and we're never
going
to get that time back. Like, you will never ever enjoy something on the same level as you did then.
And I guess a bit like with Bella Baxter, everything, you're experiencing everything for the first time, the novelty of everything is so intoxicating. Yeah. Once you watch that, I also recommend that you go and read the very good Annie Lord piece about the
girls' holiday. I did read that.
Oh, did
in fact,
you?
I read that before Christmas. Yes. And that's when I first saw about this film and was like, I must go away and watch that. But I forgot. So thank you very much for the reminder, honey.
You are welcome.
I actually have two quick recommendations as well before we wrap up. On the topic of leading men, as we have been today, unlikely leading chaps, I am obsessed with the new Netflix show, The Brother's Son. Have you heard of it?
My boss told me that I would love it.
Okay, I will read you the blurb, shall I?
Yes, please, babes.
When the head of a Taiwanese triad is shot by an assassin, his eldest son, Charles Chairleg's son, heads to Los Angeles to protect his mother and brother, who's been completely sheltered from the truth of his family until now.
He's called Charles Chairleg.
Chairleg's his nickname.
Oh,
he's called Charles' son. He, the actor, is Justin Chien. My God.
Is he a hottie?
He's a hottie. Ooh. But he is an unlikely leading man. So without giving too much away, he is a hardcore gangster. And one moment is killing three people with practically one swoop of his arm. And in the next is pulling out some beautiful Madeleines while British Bake Off plays in the background.
That sounds like an ideal kind of man.
It's so good. And Michelle Yeoh's in it. She's excellent.
From Everything Everywhere All at Once.
Yes. Oscar-winning actress. She plays the mother.
Yes. Oh, this sounds great.
Really recommend. It's got 85% on Rotten Tomatoes, which is a high score.
It's a high score. Okay, I'm going to watch that.
And the other Netflix show with an unlikely leading man that I would like to recommend is Boy Swallows Universe. Have you heard of it?
Vaguely.
So it's a 7-part series based on the bestseller by Trent Dalton, and it follows a young boy who is my unlikely leading man, the 13-year-old Eli Bell. He's got to navigate 1980s Brisbane's criminal world, so it's all set in Australia, and it's all about, again, kind of about gangsters, actually. It's a similar-ish, or drug dealers. It's not a million miles off the criminal underworld, I suppose you could say. But it's this amazing, like, beautiful storytelling with almost a sort of fantastical edge, you know, like dream sequences, but that feel a bit magical realist or a bit fantastical.
Yes.
It's just done really beautifully, and the 13-year-old kid who plays Eli Bell is Felix Cameron, and honestly, you know how kids can be quite shit actors most of the time? He is so believable. He is honestly fantastic. I think it's his second major role in a series, but he's just so, so good. Honestly,
okay.
I cannot recommend
it. And that's on Netflix as well?
That's on Netflix as well. The acting is just brilliant. Travis Fimmel is in it as Lyle, the kid's stepfather, Eli Bell's. Travis Fimmel was Ragnar Lothbrok in Vikings. Oh. Another unlikely leading man who also happens to be extremely attractive.
We sound desperately horny in this episode.
Which is really weird that there does... Honestly, if you have not seen Vikings, Ragnar Lothbrok, whoo!
I haven't seen Vikings.
Oh, you've got to watch.
I do like a big, hairy man.
A big, hairy Viking. He is excellent. He was in The Beast, Raised by Wolves. He's really good in it. I just loved it. Honestly, go and watch it. The brother is also excellent. I think that actor is called...
Any good gals in this show, Cathers?
Lee Tiger Halley.
Just your eye on the blokes.
To be fair, yes. The mother is excellent. And her name is Phoebe Tonkin. She's an Australian actress.
Oh, I've heard of her.
She was in The Secret Circle.
Right.
She's very good. I really... really recommend. I haven't read the book, but the book was a huge bestseller.
Right. That sounds great. Also, on the topic of gorgeous, gorgeous boys.
my God. What is wrong with us?
Leo Whiddle.
Yes.
Guys, I have the advanced screeners of One Day. I also got Netflix to give you some.
I haven't received them yet, but thank you.
So One Day is the TV adaptation of the book by David Nichols. And it's coming February the 10th. So we're going to watch it in advance of that. When I say everyone is going to be watching it, everyone is going to be watching it.
And Leo Whiddle was, in fact, in White Lotus.
He is the one that had a sexual relationship with his uncle.
In the later season two.
Fantastic scene that. Do you remember? From behind
the curtain. A very shocking scene. It's not what you're expecting to see, is it? At all.
No.
You and Jennifer Coolidge together.
No, exactly.
Get rather blindsided.
We do.
Season 3's been all announced now, by the way. Have you seen the cast? It's going to have...
the cast?
Lucius Malfoy. You know, our claim to fame when we went to the opening of Gringotts at Harry Potter World and he did it. What's the actor called again? You know who I mean.
I do know who you mean.
Jason Isaacs.
Yes, that's who it is.
Who also played Captain Hook and Peter Pan.
Oh,
fun fact.
Of course he did.
He's a very well-known British actor.
Yes. And Leo Whiddle stars opposite Ambika Mod, who was fantastic.
Oh.
And this is going to hurt.
Okay.
I'm 2 episodes in, and I know this was an embargo. I can't actually say anything else. But when the embargo lifts, when it comes out, we will get right into it, won't we, babes?
Yes, we will.
Oh, it's perfect for Valentine's Day as well. A love story just ahead of Valentine's Day.
I have one final talking point.
Yes, babe.
I would like to discuss with you. So there's been a real furore around influencer marketing at the moment. Mm. Italy, as a country, has actually decided to kind of turn on influencers in the wake of a charity Christmas cake scandal.
Gosh, tell me more. I don't know anything about this.
So Chiara Ferragni, who is the mega Italian influencer, she's one of the biggest people on the platform. I think she had like 30 million followers. She was kind of one of the original influencers. She had a blog called The Blonde Salad. So Chiara has been at the center of this huge controversy, which actually dates back to late 2022. She joined forces with a Piedmont-based cake company called Balocco to endorse its Pandoro Christmas cake. The Ferragni branded cake was priced at €9, which is almost triple the standard version. And the company, Anne Ferragni, claimed that the proceeds from the cake would be donated to a children's hospital in Turin. In fact, Balocco had given €50,000 to the hospital prior to the initiative launch and made no further donations. So they insinuated that the sales of this cake would impact the size of the donation, which it obviously did not. They'd already made the donation. Chiara Ferragni was paid €1 million for this partnership, and the Italian government are pissed. So there's now, they've launched a fraud investigation into her. She was fined $1 million just before Christmas and had to do a huge mea culpa apology because she claimed it was a communication error, whereas Italy's kind of government, I think, are trying to crack down on the power of influencers and the money they make out of promoting products. I think they're kind of making an example out of her. But what I found really interesting, and this is in particular a Bloomberg opinion piece I read by Rachel Sanderson, she titled it, "This Italian Influencer Flew Too Close to the Digital Sun," and asks whether her troubles signal a turning point for social media marketers. What I found fascinating is she starts the beats with Brunello Cucinelli, who's the quiet luxury king.
Yeah.
King of Kashmir. He lives in a hilltop town in Umbria, and he said that he believes that soon privacy will be the new luxury. So we already are feeling a bit funny about the intense sharing, I suppose, that these influencers do. We're becoming more attuned to the fact that they aren't just individuals that happen to stumble on making cool content. These are very savvy business people. They're marketers.
Such a good point.
And
I'm surprised it's taken so long for people for
this tide change. Yeah, they're saying it signifies a sea change, basically. And apparently Italy often lead the way on legislation around this kind of thing, and often the rest of the world follows,
right?
Especially around tech and around fashion. So Rachel Sanderson says as well that traditional media is having a bit of a comeback. Good news for us.
Yay!
She says it's back in vogue for fashion brands, which means that less money is being sprayed around startup media brands and influencers.
Has she commented on it?
Yeah, she did like a very tearful mea culpa video saying that her intentions were always pure and that she's going to donate $1 million to this hospital for children, blah, blah, blah. But she essentially insinuated that she felt that the ruling was harsh.
Right.
And I think that has not been good for her public image. She now hasn't posted on Instagram since December 18th. And yeah, I think that's her longest online silence like ever since she started out. But B, I think people just felt it was too defensive.
Has there ever been a good celebrity public apology?
Ooh.
We should look into that.
We should.
We should do a segment.
Where's one that everyone bought?
Yeah, where everyone's like, yeah, fair enough. Well done.
Interesting. She is definitely on thin ice. So as I said, being investigated now on top of the 1 million fine for serious fraud, and lots of like Coca-Cola have shelved an ad campaign that they had to come out with her. Safilo, who are the world's number two eyewear group, have dumped her. The Prime Minister of Italy was taking swipes. Like, she's kind of now become public enemy number one.
Gosh, well, I quite like to see it. If you're fraudulent,
yeah,
and you can't just get away with it.
I think it's a step towards real regulation in the sector.
Well, Cathers, I think that's good. I think there does need to be more regulation.
Yeah, I think people are just becoming a little bit tired of influencer culture generally. And I think the shine's gone from it a bit. Where originally we wanted to buy products from influencers because they felt like real people. Now they don't, again.
But interestingly, because for some reason I still follow Millie Grace Court from Love Island. Do you remember her? Did you ever watch her? I don't know why, but I still follow her, I think, because I like watching her makeup tutorials sometimes. But whenever she sells anything via her Instagram, like her hair straighteners or whatever, I always look at the comments to see, like, how successful is this? Like, are people asking questions? She gets so many comments being like, oh my God, getting this, or like tagging a friend being like, need, or like asking questions like, I'm going to buy this. Can I just ask X, Y, Z? Like, huge engagement with the stuff she's wanting to sell.
It's weird, isn't it? There's certain influencers that can really shift product, and then there are others that can't. I've spoken to like PR friends about this in the past, and someone could have a huge following on Instagram, but they don't have that same engagement whereby if they encourage their followers to buy something, something, it's just crickets. Exactly. However, someone that might have a third of the following than the big names has a super engaged audience that genuinely buy all their recommendations.
I think you're right. And also, I think it depends how authentic, like Millie Grace Court is like a girl's girl, says it how it is. People love how she's like a bit like gobby and like very down to earth. And yes, you can totally imagine her using these hair curlers, straighteners, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Because she's really into her makeup and her hair and grooming and everything. So I guess it's just whether it makes sense.
Apparently as well, the last thing I'll say on Kiara, it shows just how serious this is. I mean, the Bloomberg piece as well is quite damning. They talk about her hubris. They talk about the way the response to the video, you know, I said her mea culpa is a bit defensive, and she basically says that the punishment was excessive considering she was only trying to help people. It's like really disfigured her manicured image. They've written, as the mask slipped, she's hired the prestige Milanese law firm Gianni Origiano and a suite of spin doctors who usually work for scandal hip Italian blue chips to resolve a very traditional corporate image crisis.
That's funny. Yeah. God, serious.
Yeah.
I guess if your whole career and livelihood depends on how people perceive you as a person.
Yeah, and she's got like an Amazon series. Her whole brand has been made of sharing granular detail of her life with her husband, with her two children, her sister, her mom. You know, those kind of influences where the entire family becomes part of their online ecosystem.
It's kind of what George Toffler was saying, wasn't it? Like, and Maya, to some extent, Maya Jama has said that as well. It's like the precariousness of a personal brand being your entire livelihood.
Yeah.
Like one wrong move and that's over.
That's what Grace Beverly always says, isn't it? That's why she built her businesses, to be able to not have her in them.
Exactly.
Well.
Well, guys, hope you've enjoyed our sport of content today. Also, my sister was like, you've got to apologise to everyone because you inserted yet another mistake into the episode last week.
Did we?
I did. I said mini pets. I meant to say Neopets.
Right.
The game.
Okay, Neopets does ring a bell to me. Whereas when you said mini pets, I was like, I've never heard of that.
I think I was getting confused with mini clip and Neopets and did a hybrid situation.
Also Tamagotchis.
And do you remember the little alien, squishy little aliens that would give birth?
And there was a rumour that they would give birth, but mine never did. That was for sure. They said if you left them in the slime, the baby would like come out of their tummies. Never did for me.
I was so jealous because I never had one and I never had a Tamagotchi either.
Oh, get the violins out.
My troubled childhood.
Right, guys, anything you want us to talk about next time, do let us know.
We've had some fantastic... Yeah, sorry, I say this every week.
I know. I'm really excited to get into our do you or do you not want to have children episode, though, because we've had some fantastic input from listeners. Ooh, there's one actually that I would love to read out because there's a fabulous article recommendation in there for lots of honeys who might need to hear this. So we were talking about fertility anxiety, obviously, the other week, and I said how I have definitely suffered from that. If anyone else is feeling the same, then I think you'll really appreciate this. So a lovely listener wrote in and said, hi, really enjoy your podcast. I'm a little older, just 40, and I appreciate the slightly different cultural perspective your ages afford you. My husband and I are very happy and have been together for 13 years. We have debated for the last 7 years about whether or not to have kids. I would assume I would want to, and I've recently decided against it. I thought this article about fertility would interest you. So much of the language around it in the press is very aggressive against women and essentially scaremongering. Yes, lots of people have fertility issues and no doubt triggered by elements of modern living, but the stats don't take into account the fact that many people who struggle in their 30s or 40s would likely have struggled in their 20s too. My sister just got pregnant accidentally at 44, and my best friend also just got pregnant accidentally at 40. The article she recommends is in The Atlantic. And the headline is, How Long Can You Wait to Have a Baby? By Jean M. Twenge. Deep anxiety about the ability to have children later in life plagues many women, but the decline in fertility over the course of a woman's 30s has been oversold. Here's what the statistics really tell us and what they don't.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah, that's interesting because I have known of so many freelancers that I work with or just random people who I know through the office who have accidentally got pregnant after 40.
Love it.
It's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's because I'm super attuned to it now that I'm a bit older, or it just happens to be more women after 40 are finding it easier to get pregnant. I don't know.
We'll get into it all in our fertility special.
Yes,
in our Will You, Won't You Have Kids.
So guys, hope you enjoyed. We will be back next week. Leave us a review on Spotify and on Apple Podcasts.
We'll love you forever.
Yes, we got one calling us naughty.
Love it.
Absolutely obsessed. Naughty but clever.
Obsessed. I'll take that.
Yeah. And do leave us a DM at ShakeUpPod on Instagram.
Love you guys.
Bye.